Well, let me just make this perfectly clear. If there's one master of the missing gap, it's got to be this man. Here comes the Colonel.
Yes, of course. There's always a comedian from down the hall sneaking in here. This one doing a Richard Nixon impression. And so silly, I can't believe it.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
You too. What are you doing here? Get out. All right. Welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. And we're going to get back to our interview in just a minute with Delilah McGirby of the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. She won the Best of Conference for her face recognition stuff at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference this past November. And, of course, at the end of the program, we're going to get listener comments and the voice of reason. So we'll get back to our interview with Delilah in just a minute. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Yes, we've thrown in the coins, and we have awakened the spirit of the fountain, who knows all, sees all, hears all, and tells all for a price. All right. Oh, spirit of the fountain, here's an easy geographic question for you. The Big Sioux River forms the border between South Dakota and which state located to the east? This should be easy for you, okay? The Big Sioux River forms the border between South Dakota and which state located to the east?
I have given you my answer. Now you may tell the other.
Cannot fool the old spirit of the fountain. If you said the Big Sioux River forms the border between South Dakota and Minnesota, you're wrong. To the east? Iowa! That's right. We're back on the line with Delilah McGirby, University of Massachusetts Lowell, where she's a professor who won the Best of Conference at the Homeland Security Technology Conference in mid-November in Boston for her face recognition tools.
We need much more than just storage or computational power of the computer. We need intelligent systems that will allow us to extract the information for whatever pattern recognition we are looking for.
Wow, it sounds like such a daunting challenge. Let's talk a little bit about your talk and presentation that you're going to give at the Homeland Security Technology Conference. It's got quite a title, and I'm going to try to get it out here, and you correct me where I'm wrong, but a random forest-based efficient comparative machine learning predictive DNA metagenomics binding technique for weapons of mass destruction events application. Now, I only understood a little bit of that. I understood about the weapons of mass destruction. I get something about the metagenomics and DNA, but what is this random forest-based efficient comparative machine learning that you're talking about?
Okay. Machine learning usually is a word that is used in methods whereby we want to predict the future based on what we know today. In this particular case, the application is, let's pick a drop of water or sand or soil from an environment that has been under attack or an environment that has been a disastrous one, whatever, and we would like to be able to detect all the microorganisms that are within that drop of water. This is a very ambitious problem and, quite honestly, a not well-posed problem because we don't know what type of bioorganism exists on Earth because we know only perhaps one-tenth or one-hundredth of all the microbes and bioorganisms that can exist. Most of the time, these bioorganisms live in communities. So we cannot culture them in the laboratory.
Okay.
And in situation like in weapon of mass destruction, where we need to really make fast decisions in terms of what needs to be done, not only to clean up the region or to know what type of drugs or vaccines or what, name it, that we need to do to be able to help the people that will be affected by it, there is a need to detect or to design methods that would allow us to extract again what type of bioorganism that might or might not have been already annotated in some database, like, for example, GenBank. Usually those bioorganisms haven't yet, otherwise we would have known about them. So to be able to solve this type of problems, first of all, we have large amount of data. We have unknown in terms of what species or organism exists in that drop of water. And third, we would like to be able to do some kind, some particular functionality called binning. So there are two ways to usually people try to tackle this problem and still looking for hopefully better solutions for it. So to tackle these problems, you either try to sequence. Nowadays, we have very fast a way of doing DNA sequencing. So you sequence that drop of water, and then you go with those sequences and try to go and see, do we have pieces of these DNA sequences that we have seen before, for example, in GenBank, which is an NIH database of all sequences that have been annotated. Some of them are still not annotated, but that have been posted on the, that database.
Yeah.
That's one way to do it, alignments. And that means that you already know a sequence, a reference sequence, which is most of the time not applicable in situations for weapon of mass destruction because you don't know the sequence, but you want to characterize it so that you know what to do with it. The second part beside what this, these are methods that you call alignments. That means you take your sequence and try to compare it to what exists, and perhaps you can find something in the gen bank that can give you information. The other second part, which is much more difficult, is based on frequency-based of what we call KMERS. So basically, since we don't know anything, and the sequencer, the current state of the art in DNA sequencing, will give you smaller sequences of a fixed size. Mm-hmm. Usually that size of the sequences can go from 10 to 100 to 2,000. And these are what we call reads. This is all what you have to work with. And you have billions, millions and billions of those reads.
Oh, really? Wow.
It's like a big puzzle.
Oh, no.
So, since many of them cannot be mapped to what we know already, because 99 or 90% of bacteria are still unknown to us.
I didn't realize that.
So we are going to use different methods to try to still classify the different organisms that I still do not know anything about. So the second method is called frequency of certain KMERS within all those reads. So the, those frequencies are going to be simply counting the occurrence of a certain combination of DNA. You can start with three nucleotides. DNA is a long sequence of molecules, and they are made of an alphabet made of four characters, A, B, C, T. And we all have in ourselves, in the, we have the same DNA, with more or less some changes, but usually the human DNA so far, based on the human genome that has been sequenced in the past 10 years or so,
sure,
we know that we don't have too many differences, but the small differences that exist still make a big difference among them, among us. Some of us will be much more tuned into developing diabetes at some point in time. Some of us perhaps will be more resistant to some drugs. So all this information usually is coded within our DNA, but in a very small part of the DNA. So that gives us an idea about where the DNA is coming from. So I come back to those reads. These are pieces of that have been sequenced. So we know the sequences, but we don't know what they mean. So what we do is we're going to take some subsequences made of two or three nucleotides. A nucleotide is one of the AGCT. Mm-hmm. And then we try to see the combinations of all of these into the sequence. And we will be using machine learning, and my definition of machine learning is in fact very simply a two-phase process. These days we hear a lot about this term machine learning.
Yes.
So usually machine learning means you have somehow a set of properties or features that you think, or biomarkers, most of the time people use the word biomarkers in this case, that we think will characterize a certain scenario.
Okay.
For example, I have a billion of those reads of size 100 nucleotides, that means 100 molecules A, D, C, T, and I will find that the particular combinations of certain frequencies of subsequences will characterize some of those reads. So machine learning is made of two phases. One, you come up with that set of features of properties that you think will definitely characterize what you are looking at. And then there is a second part, which we call classifier. So usually you have two parts. Once you find the feature space, there are many methods for classifiers. And the random forest is a classifier. So when you see a random forest Bayes efficient comparative machine learning, that means in that scenario, I'm talking about a classifier of the category of random forest. It's a random forest, like I would tell my students, is really not a big deal. All what it means is kind of a decision tree so that you can discern among different events and try to detect the particular situation where the feature seems to be really clustering some ways together. So machine learning, if one wants to simply define it, is nothing but a method by which we can observe a certain scene or scenario or samples. And when we have observed enough of those samples, then we go back and use unknown additional set of samples and say, I'm going to predict what is your label based on what I have already seen before when doing my training. So the technical word training means observing with a kind of a set of properties that one thinks has found that would characterize that particular scene or scenario or sample. And then you validate those features by predicting new samples that you would never have seen. So that's basically machine learning for me, the machine learning definition.
Wow, that's.
I hope I wasn't too technical, but I tried to make it in a way that everybody could understand.
Oh no, I think that was fascinating. Of course, I saw the word random forest, and we think of a forest. And actually, you're talking about a cluster of properties inside these DNA that you're looking at, and. Now, I've got to ask you some obtuse questions here. One is that we know that many of the bacteria that is coming around nowadays is getting to be pretty resistant to antibiotics and that sort of thing. Is your studies going to make it easier to come up with antibiotics to help people who are getting infected?
Usually, this is one application of it. Usually, when you characterize a sequence to a cluster of pieces of DNA that have been, for example, studied before into, because the DNA, the most important thing is, okay, for drug discovery, the DNA usually will give you some information about what particular genes exist in that particular microorganism.
Okay.
And then the genes will give you what type of proteins are going to be coded by those particular genes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we have the proteins, this is where the drug discovery comes in. Those proteins usually will be in a certain structure in 3D. And it's that structure that is going to define what particular drug can or cannot interact with it. So when somebody is looking for example, a particular drug, usually what they are looking for is a small molecule that can bind in a particular space within a particular protein to either silence that gene so that that protein, in case the disease in at hand, is created by the lack of existence of that protein. That means you want that protein to start being translated and exist more in the cell. Or sometimes there is a protein that we don't want to exist and we want to stop that. So by drug discovery, or including discovering what causes the bacteria, in fact, to be resistant, because bacteria are very smart in trying to resist. They understand much more about the environment, and they try to resist and block any antibodies, in other words, the body trying to defend itself. So anything that deals with sequences of proteins and the keyword 3D structure, which is still one of the biggest open problem in biology as we speak.
Oh, really?
And of big interest to many, many, many biologists and engineers and other clinicians, is to be able to predict from the sequence what the 3D sequence, the 3D structure will be, so that you can find a small molecule or a drug, if you will, that will be binding within that protein. So yes, every time we know new sequences, to answer your question, that means additional information that will lead us to understand better how proteins interact with each other. And of course, we know that all our cells that are within our bodies need proteins to function. So all this research in life sciences is all about understanding what functions those proteins are, what those four proteins are, what are the genes that are going to be coding for certain proteins. These are all open problems, research problems as we speak. And of course, because they are not going to be needing one engineer or one computer scientist, you have usually multidisciplinary teams working together.
Sure.
Biologists, engineers, computer scientists, clinicians, they all need to work with each other.
Everybody.
Because the biologist would know much more about the biology. The engineer knows much more about how to build systems. And of course, we have to come up with algorithms that will allow us to deal with this huge amount of data.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So in this paper, what we are showing is how, in fact, we could use machine learning to try to classify sequences that otherwise we would not have known about and that have not been known about or annotated already in a GenBank.
All right, Delilah, I want to ask you right now, what do you want to be the takeaway? I mean, when people come and listen to you, what do you hope that they will leave with? What is one overriding message you want to deliver at this conference?
I think one of the message at this conference, because this conference is about homeland security, is try to introduce this notion of binning to the specific audience of people going to homeland security. And what I want them to really get as a message is that our days with larger data, like in cases of weapon of mass destructions, when we have larger regions being infected and we have microorganisms at the DNA level, how we can use machine learning, which is a very big word these days, to try to classify those unknown organisms that we don't know anything about.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. Would you put on the meditation cap for just a minute, kind of look down the line, maybe give us a prediction of the future, maybe 5 or 10 years down the line? You said this is going to be an exhaustive study as it goes on, and so you don't see things happening too rapidly, but surely you must be able to see some things that are coming on, and maybe you can look down the future for us.
Yes, I think, like I mentioned earlier at the beginning, the binning problem and the metagenomics is, from the engineering point of view, is not a well formulated problem. Because usually engineers, you have the problem in terms of input, and you try to work into a solution to get an output. In this particular problem, because we don't have enough knowledge on organisms annotated means they have already been sequenced and we know enough some information of it. So I expect that in the future, as more information is gathered in governmental libraries like NIH ones, we should be able to have more knowledge for hopefully a larger number of organisms so that we can come up with better way of doing prediction and machine learning on DNA sequences that hopefully will allow us to act rapidly in disaster situation or non-disaster situation in terms of, for example, discovering new drugs by knowing more in terms of what sequences seems to be behaving similarly to other sequences already known, so that instead of wasting a lot of time looking into what this particular organism can do or cannot do, if we could indeed have enough information, knowledge, that we can base our decision on, then situations like this would not necessarily be very difficult to handle, because we can just sequence the microorganism and try to see what is the closest microorganism that we know of that has already been annotated in the database. So if you will, before we reach that end, and it is going to take us many, many more years, hopefully with the methodologies, by the way, binning is not a new concept, is the actual application of it and usage of different features and different classifiers that we are trying to put on here. Hopefully people will be dealing with more analytics, with less information today, to be able to help us still continue to progress until the day when we have enough knowledge so that we can have much easier ways to solve this problem.
All right.
I predict this is going to be a problem that is going to stay for years.
All right. Delilah McGurvey, professor, University of Massachusetts at Lowell, in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Departments, and director of C-Mines, which she founded, Research Center. Fascinating interview. We really appreciate you being with us. And thank you so much for being part of the Homeland Security Technology Conference this year.
Welcome.
And now, we make time for the Voice of Reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
A few years ago, I was privileged to attend coursework at the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business, and one of the professors there instilled in me something that I really think I've taken to heart and been able to benefit myself career-wise and those I work with, and that is, frankly, use data to define and not defend a position. I think oftentimes many of us are so interested in being right that we'll go out and find data that supports our position, and a lot of times that data indicates, you know, perhaps that we're right or a portion of our argument is correct, but rather there's more to be said or thought. So, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I look to find data that helps define what I'm going to do that day, week, month, year, as opposed to use data to defend what I haven't done or why I've chosen to do what I want to do. My name is Fran Staples. I'm Director of North American Sales for the IEEE.
So you decide, has this really been the Voice of Reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.